Welcome to the game show sponsored by the Gaming Stadium here on Sportsnet 650. I'm your host, Max Sussman. Today we're talking about the Overwatch League again, because Stage 1 is over, and the Vancouver Titans have absolutely dominated the league for the entirety of Stage 1. They went 7-0, undefeated. They dropped six maps along the way. That's like dropping a game or two in a set of tennis. They won the Stage 1 championship. And joining me on the show today is the guy who kind of called it. When we did our season preview, he did say they were the expansion team with the best chance of kind of winning it all, getting to the playoffs, making a deep run. They did. It's Keith Kapsick from The Score Esports, a.k.a. my Overwatch guy. We're going to talk about the Titans. We're going to talk about the Toronto Defiant as well as the league in general. And we'll get into some Magic the Gathering talk at the end. So let's get right to my talk with Keith Kapsick here on The Game Show. He is a writer at The Score Esports, a data entry prodigy, a trading card game snob, and maybe the next Magic the Gathering Arena Pro. He is Keith Kapsick. Keith, thanks for joining me here on The Game Show again.
No problem. Thanks for having me back.
All right, Keith, I wanted to chat Overwatch League Stage 1. We're obviously a week or so into Stage 2. This will air just as the second weekend kind of is underway. But Stage 1, last time we talked, I asked you who you thought we'd see in the overall postseason playoffs, and you pretty much nailed the Stage 1 playoffs. New York, Vancouver, Philly, Boston, and San Francisco all made it, and your dark horse picks were Seoul and Toronto. They both made it. So, how did you do it, Mr. Prediction?
I mean, I think I got a little bit fortunate in with a lot of the expansion teams panning out the way they did. I mean, part of it is just, particularly with Vancouver and Toronto, you know, that they had some sort of like standout Korean import sort of players, and you usually expect those players in kind of across all esports to come in with play with a little more experience than you expect. So I think it was a bit of a good prediction, but also a bit of luck.
So Vancouver and New York both went 7-0 in Stage 1. Vancouver was a slight bit better on map record. They were 24-6. New York went 22-6-1. But for the Titans, it was just about as dominant a performance that the league has ever seen across a full stage. So I guess simply the first question, how did the Vancouver Titans do it?
Well, I think when it comes to the Titans, like the first thing you kind of think of is this sort of, I don't know, like magnificent teamwork that they play with. And I think we saw that throughout the whole stage. Is, you know, this is a team that has been, you know, more or less a family since Overwatch has been an esport, like going all the way back to Runaway and the way that they played together in Apex and the way that they basically sort of held the organization and the team together as a group. And I think you saw a team that knew the meta better than anyone. They were just the best Reinhardt 3-3 team in the league. And, you know, given the way that the meta panned out and that being, you know, the default best thing to do at all times, I think, you know, not everything went right for Vancouver, and they certainly played, you know, well enough to win. So when the meta is exactly what you want it to be, it allows Bumper to shine. You know, things start going in the right direction, and they just kind of improved week to week. And it was really, really kind of something to watch.
Is there a better Reinhardt player than Bumper in the world right now?
I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to make a case for anybody else, honestly. I mean, I will say, you know, in the playoffs we saw Fissure play some, like, incredible tank play when Seoul upset New York, but I think it would be, you'd be hard-pressed to make a case for a better Reinhardt than Bumper right now.
We're talking Overwatch League with Keith Kapsick from The Score Esports. The Titans have, coming into the season, we talked about this before the season started, a bit of a reputation as being really, really, really well-built for the GOATS meta, but maybe there's a little bit of criticism that that was all they were good at. Do you think that in Stage 1 that they answered that question?
I will say it's pretty hard to make that argument, I think, just because of, you know, how ubiquitous GOATS was for the entire season. It was just sort of the best thing to do, and when it came down to the playoffs, you know, you really saw Vancouver in particular, but just teams across the board rely on the on those ghost compositions in order to get the success that they needed. But I will say, and this might be getting a little bit too ahead, Vancouver has looked good, you know, in a very limited amount of time, obviously, in the second stage here where Goats is not as prevalent. And I think, you know, hopefully we'll get a better look this stage at how they're going to be able to adjust when they can't just play Reinhardt 3-3 every time.
We'll come back to that when we talk about the patching and the nerfs and the buffs that have happened in the last month or so. But I want to stay on the stage one playoffs for a little bit here. We're talking about the Overwatch League with Keith Kapsick from the Score Esports here on the Game Show on Sportsnet 650. One thing I didn't realize, because I watched a lot of the finals without sound on because I was doing something else. I didn't realize this till after the match. Somin Su, who really popped off in the finals specifically, he did like 14,000 damage in the final series. He was playing with a broken left thumb. Now, I know when I play games on a keyboard and mouse, the thumb, the left thumb specifically, that's your spacebar thumb, that's your jump button in most games. Yeah. But as more of an experienced Overwatch player than me, contextualize that for our listeners. How much of a disadvantage was Somin Su at with a broken thumb?
Well, I mean, it's obviously that you're going to be put in some sort of discomfort. I don't know this for sure. I haven't looked at Somin Su's keybinds, but often pro players, they actually bind jumping to your mouse wheel because it's a little quicker. Mm-hmm. So I imagine that it was not like literally his jump finger, and he probably made some adjustments to his binds, you know, given that he was injured. But that being said, it's obviously something that's going to cause you discomfort, but it certainly does not surprise me, given the reputation that Runaway and Vancouver have, that Somin Su would be willing to play with, you know, any sort of injury in order to make sure that they were victorious. That it just seems like such a sort of quintessential Runaway team thing for, you know, one player to be injured, another player to be, you know, joking around, and then, you know, they're just out there kind of scrapping to win.
Yeah, I mean, that really speaks to the bravado that this team has. And they came in to the league. They started off, I think, 4-0 in their first two series. And after that, Bumper famously said, we're going to 4-0 the whole league. We're not going to drop a game. Obviously, they almost did that, but they dropped six games, but a pretty near perfect stage one. With that bravado, with that kind of almost trollishness, I'm not sure how you'd say it, but how can this team, do you think this team is capped out, or do you think this team still has room to improve?
Well, I think this stage is going to be very telling for that, but just, you know, the nature of adjusting to a new metagame. But I certainly don't think it's capped out. You know, this is a team that, you know, was passed over. They were the sort of the ones left behind in Korea when the Overwatch League started. And, you know, they went from being that to, you know, the best contenders team by a lot, winning multiple contenders titles, and now showing up in the Overwatch League and kind of playing with a chip on their shoulder in a way, you know, showing everyone what was left behind. And I really don't think that we've even seen the best of Vancouver yet, because, you know, these are guys that are still adjusting to a new life in a new country. And, you know, they've always had that sort of teamwork and the you know, the camaraderie. That's all down pat, but there's still a long way to go for the kind of domination, technical skill, hero pool, map pool that these guys have. And I really think that, you know, as the season goes on, as we get closer to the final playoffs and, you know, stage two, stage three, we're going to see even more from Vancouver.
I think you might have just answered my next question, but if you'll just humor me, this team right now looks to me, and I don't have the most trained eye when it comes to Overwatch, but this team looks to me to be the best team in the league with a bullet. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I think it's pretty hard to argue otherwise. You know, I think, you know, if it had to come down to, you know, them playing New York and it was a tight series and they just, you know, sort of scrapped it out, and there would be some arguments. Oh, well, you know, New York has all this experience. They might have lost to Vancouver, but, you know, it's still anybody's ball game. But after seeing New York go out so early and then Vancouver playing the way they did, I think it's impossible to argue that any other team is the best team in the Overwatch League.
We're talking Overwatch League Stage 1. The Vancouver Titans won it a few weekends ago here with Keith Kapstick from The Score Esports on the game show on Sportsnet 650. They don't, as far as I can tell, do like Stage 1 MVP, Stage 2 MVP. Last season, the MVP was Jonak. If you were given a vote, who's your Stage 1 MVP vote go to?
I think it would be, statistically, it would be hard not to give it to Somensu. I mean, his Zarya was just unbelievable. He was second in the league in damage and was one of the highest in eliminations as well. Just like kind of an all-around dominant performance for, you know, somebody who had played Zarya coming in. But, you know, in Korea, it's hard to imagine, but there was a time where GOATs wasn't the only thing that you could do, right? So, you know, a lot of these DPS players coming into the Overwatch League this year, they had to learn how to play Zarya, who's traditionally a tank hero. So Somensu comes in, and, you know, a lot of these guys, they can play a bunch of heroes or whatever, but, you know, he's used to playing Tracer, and he's used to playing Sombra in years past in Contenders. And the way that he was able to sort of set himself apart as, you know, this world-class Zarya, I think, and Vancouver's dominance, I think it would be hard to give it to anyone other than Somensu. And I think if you had to pick the second place, it might be Bumper. Like, maybe his stats weren't unbelievable or whatever. He didn't have, you know, the most damage in the league. It's not flashy or whatever, but being the main tank on a, you know, Ryan 3-3 team like that, that was so dominant, it's pretty hard to ignore the kind of influence that that kind of leadership and sort of stabilizing presence has on a world class team.
I was gonna say that's what Somensu said after the finals, was that San Francisco's game plan revolves so much around kind of dealing with Bumper that Vancouver's game plan then had to be a lot of how to protect Bumper and how to kind of play off of that. That other teams game plan so much for Bumper, it allows players like Hoxell and Somensu and Stitch to pop off because,
yeah,
sort of like you see with like you know, a player like James Harden or Steph Curry in the NBA, where the eyeballs of the defense are so focused on them that other players get looks that they might not have with other teammates on their team.
Yeah, definitely. I also think that the basketball analogy almost goes a little further because and particularly in these GOATs metas, because it's almost like with the way that the, like, ultimate economy works, right? Is you know, if they're focusing down Bumper, your team is so, and this composition is so built around these main tanks that if Bumper is off his game or their focus on Bumper allows them to throw Vancouver off their game, it's almost like not only are they getting to Steph Curry, but they're also making it so in the future Steph Curry doesn't have like a free three-pointer or whatever, you know, like that, the way that ultimates work, where, you know, it's almost a guaranteed win team fight when you're able to chain, you know, three or four ultimates together. And I think that's like a good analogy to make, because it's not only, you know, one possession, it's not only, you know, a handful of possessions. If you're able to focus down Bumper the way you would focus down, you know, a LeBron or a James Harden, it can impact the game for, you know, multiple team fights in a row. So their ability to adjust to that is just a testament to the kind of like depth that this team has.
We've heard a lot of talk about this. You and I have talked about this, about the synergy, the chemistry of this old runaway roster of the Vancouver Titans. Now, I believe off the top of my head, Rappel is the only player on this team that wasn't on Runaway. Do you think that's really what it comes down to, though? Is it purely just that they have better synergy than other teams?
I mean, I think there's just this kind of might sound a little strange, and I think it'll. I've been working on a project at work, so I have like some further insight into this. But I think this is just kind of this magical team. Like they didn't form, you know, it wasn't Cloud9 or Fnatic or these massive esports organizations that put a bunch of players together and just said, oh, well, you're all talented, like, you'll figure it out. This is a team that has been together for years. They faced adversity, and they kept themselves afloat. You know, there was times where there was rumors that the players were helping pay rent or helping, you know, pay for their team house and pay for their all of their own sort of accommodations when they were still in Korea, and they were not the kind of, you know, world-class talents that we see today. So this team has just been through so much together, and I think that's where you see synergy that's, like, on a level that, you know, we're not used to in the league. That's where you see, you know, these adjustments, this, like, high-level communication. Like you said, Soman Su showing up when they're focusing bumper, and, like, these very kind of small, very high-level reactions to what the opposition is doing to try to defeat them. And I think it's just amazing to watch.
I'm going to ask you to pick nits here for a second on a team that lost only six maps all season so far. What did the Titans not do so well?
Oh, I think it's fair to say that they're – what's the best way to put this? I think it's fair to say that they're a team that is not – always, and obviously this is not true about every match, but they're a team that is not always, you know, putting their foot on the gas when they get ahead. They have a propensity to, you know, get a little fast and loose when they get ahead in series or when they get ahead really early. And I think, you know, as they get more mature, you'll see them when they see that window about to close, you know, they'll step on it and you know, 4-0 teams and 3-0 teams and that kind of thing. But I think that would be a criticism that I would have. And it's not even like, it's obviously not a massive criticism because they didn't lose any matches. But I think I'd like to see, you know, these guys, Bumper in particular, you know, really shut the door when they get ahead early. Cause they're always ahead early. So that would be my only criticism.
We're talking Overwatch League Vancouver Titans, the Stage 1 champions, here with Keith Capstick on from The Score Esports on the game show on Sportsnet 650. At this point, what is it right now? It's April of 2019. This roster, going back to when they were runaway, their last loss was in July of 2018 in contenders to Kongdu Panthera.
Yeah.
Over the history of professional Overwatch dating to Apex, dating before the Overwatch League existed, is this the best run we've ever seen?
I mean, I think you'd certainly have a hard time debating that. It's very hard because, you know, the Apex was very competitive in those first couple years, and then as the Overwatch League was announced, there was, you know, teams trying to gear up for that, and then there was Season 1. I think it's certainly one of the most amazing stories. I think New York, you know, has put together a kind of a body of work in the Overwatch League that, you know, Vancouver is certainly very well, you know, capable of matching. And obviously New York has their own problems to figure out. But I think as far as, like, you know, a story that, you know, just kind of keeps on giving, you know, Vancouver is probably the most amazing thing I've seen so far in competitive Overwatch. And that run has just been, you know, a huge part of it.
You probably already answered this when I asked you who the league MVP was for Stage 1, but if you were to give a Vancouver Titans team MVP for Stage 1, who would it be for?
I think team-wise, I mean, it's just hard not to give it to Bumper. Obviously, Soman Su is the one with all the kills and all the damage, but Bumper is just, like, you know, the sort of gift that keeps on giving for them. I will say, though, that, you know, I feel like it wouldn't be right to not include Janu in that conversation. And, like, a lot of these guys, Hawksaw and Slime, and Twilight, all played, you know, obviously instrumental roles. Janu had some games where he just kind of popped off, played out of his mind on D.Va. And I think, you know, having good D.Va play is just been the core of the game on a competitive level for so long. But I think just the sort of leadership and the way that Bumper keeps the team kind of cool and calm is just irreplaceable.
You play D.Va, right? That's your main?
Yeah. D.Va is the position, is the hero that I play almost exclusively, almost a one trick.
So what does Johnny do with D.Va that's so good and so unique?
I mean, the thing about D.Va is, you know, there was once a composition not as ubiquitous as goats, but you know, still pretty dominating in dive, which was sort of D.Va and Winston and some of these more like quick divey DPS heroes like Tracer and Genji. And for a long time, Winston and D.Va defined that metagame in their ability to sort of take a risk and execute it. You would find a DPS or a healer on the other team, and you would isolate them, and you would dive them with these two tanks, and then, you know, you would snowball the team fight from there. Now, within GOATS, you know, a lot of that pressure is just put on the D.Va player. You know, you have this sort of incredible mobility for a hero that has so much health. And I think what Janu does is really sort of make smart decisions. You're never seeing him, like, you know, try to take out the opposing team's Lucio and just dying in the back line because they realize that, you know, their tanks weren't as out of position as they thought they were. Janu is kind of meticulous in his ability to sort of strike at the right time and make sure that, you know, he can rack up those kills without putting himself at too much of a risk. And, you know, there's just like a lot of pressure on D.Va players in general to have that sort of strong decision making, because the hero is just so versatile, right? You have to combo your bombs with the Rein ults and combo your bombs with the Zarya ults, but you also have to, you know, make sure you're eating the opposing team's grab. Like, it's just like there's so many game defining moments that really just come down to strong D.Va play. And I think that's kind of what Janu shows off, is this ability to be kind of the five tool player out there.
After this, more Overwatch talk with Keith Capstick from theScore Esports on the Game Show, sponsored by the Gaming Stadium on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to the Game Show, sponsored by the Gaming Stadium here on Sportsnet 650. I'm your host, Max Sussman. We're just going to get right back into this Overwatch chat with Keith Capstick from theScore Esports. I want to get into the patch, and then I want to get into the Toronto Defiant, our other Canadian Overwatch League team. There was a patch a few weeks ago. They added Baptiste to the game, a new healer support player, or character rather, and there were some buffs to characters we can get into in a second, and maybe, possibly, a little bit of a nerf to D.Va's self-destruct specifically. Post that patch, though, week one of stage two, the Titans set a record on King's Row, winning an attack in 2 minutes and 44 seconds. That's like they're speedrunning against professional teams.
Yeah.
Did you what did they do in that particular map that allowed them to literally dominate it as well as anybody ever has?
I mean, when it comes down to that kind of thing, I think it has a lot less to do with the patch and more to do with just like the sort of general skill level of this team. Like when you're running hot and, you know, you come out with the composition that you know best, and you just steamroll your opponents, you charge your ults, and then you just do it again. Like, Overwatch is a snowballing game. That's just the reality of a game that's so heavily defined by ultimates. And I think what we saw there was just, you know, them dominate their opponents, not necessarily you know, anything unique about the patch or the way that they played.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, they added Baptiste to the game. healers and support characters are very much a part of this meta. Do you think he'll find his way into the pro scene?
I mean, I think there's a lot of question marks about just the way that compositions are going to work going forward. Like, we saw, I think there was a record in week one where, you know, 27 characters were played or something like that. Like, you know, everyone is still trying to figure out exactly, you know, who they want in their lineups and what compositions are supposed to look like. And, you know, is 3-3 still going to be just as dominant and that kind of thing. But I think we did see some Baptiste even in the Vancouver map. I think on the first map, we saw some amount of Baptiste out of Hong Xiao. And, you know, I think that if we're ever going to see, you know, some creative stuff, this is the time right now, especially, you know, in the regular season. There's still room to see how these new heroes or, you know, newly sort of reworked heroes are going to interact with one another. And especially in the healing position, like we saw nerfs to Lucio and that kind of thing. So I think we'll see some Baptiste going forward. A lot of mobility, certainly a lot of his kit can be used at a pro level, particularly the ultimate. So it's possible that he becomes a fixture, and if he doesn't, we'll certainly see him in sort of corner cases and you know, some creative game plans.
That patch, we're talking Overwatch League with Keith Kapsick from The Score Esports here on the game show on Sportsnet 650. That patch buffed Reaper and buffed Junkrat, among others, but those two I kind of want to hone in on, because at the beginning of Overwatch, when Overwatch first came out, when I did play it, you saw a lot of Reaper and a lot of Junkrat in games online. They were just very popular characters. They've dropped out a little bit of late. Do you think that with this patch, we'll see, you know, more of those edgelords playing Reaper and more Junkrat mains popping up in the actual Overwatch League from this patch?
I think it's certainly possible. Like, it's true that, you know, so there's this interesting thing at play here where, like, Junkrat and Reaper are just not particularly aim-heavy characters. And so I remember in early Overwatch 2 when people, you know, were first playing Junkrat and Reaper, you know, they're kind of pub-stompy. They're kind of like, you know, when you're in your kind of your rank games, you're like, wow, these characters are really good. But then when you get to the pro level, you know, someone picks Junkrat, and they're just spamming their grenades, and then they just get shot in the head by Widow or whatever. You know, like, these guys in the Overwatch League, they just don't miss, right? So they really need to, you know, give these characters the buffs, like obviously they did, in order for them to see competitive play. Both characters are, you know, the kind of characters that, you know, within the right team composition or against the right team can see some success. You know, if you need to spam down some shields, or you can get your Reaper in nice and close to the tanks, they can sort of take over games. I don't think that they're going to be, you know, with these buffs, they're going to be ubiquitous. I don't think you're going to see them like you see Reinhardt and you see D.Va and you see Zarya. But it is nice to see Blizzard making these changes that will mix up the sort of competitive diversity a little bit. And I do think that it's working. And like I said, we're seeing tons of different heroes, and everyone's still trying to figure out exactly what's going on. So I think there'll be a part of things, but maybe not a mainstay.
Obviously, this patch has, at least in week one, changed what the pro game looks like for now. Do you think that this patch will do enough to nerf GOATs, or do you think that'll kind of work its way back into being kind of the mainstay?
Well, I think what's important is that not necessarily that it nerfs GOATs, because, you know, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing that there is a best thing to do. Like, that's just the nature of games, right? There's always a solution to the problem.
Yeah. And nobody's telling the NBA to nerf three-pointers.
Yeah, exactly, right? So I think GOATs existing, at least from my perspective as a fan, is not necessarily a bad thing. And I don't think it's even a bad thing if it's the best thing to do. But I think what's important is that there are, you know, suitable counters, and there are, you know, there are characters and compositions and strategies that if you choose to use and to execute properly, you know, the other team will have to switch off goats. And then you get this, you know, you get this kind of back and forth where, you know, you mix your team up to beat their goats, and then they change it up, and then you switch it back, and like that kind of thing. And that's the kind of, you know, juking that you want to see at the highest level. That's when you see, you know, how impressive it is that these guys can play so many different characters and really shine strategically as well as, you know, with their skill. I don't think Goats is dead. And then I think if anybody showed us Goats isn't dead, it was Vancouver in week one. But I do think that it's not going to be as sort of dominating as it was last stage.
Let's talk about the Toronto Defiant real quick here before we move on and get out. Talking the Overwatch League here, stage one mostly, a little bit of stage two with Keith Kapsick from the Score Esports on the game show here on Sportsnet 650. I will cop to the not really following Toronto too much until the playoffs this year, but they made a pretty good run. I think they were the three seed going into the playoffs. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
So, hey, Canada, number one and number three. What, kind of like the way we did with the Titans before the season started, what did they do well that got them into the playoffs?
Well, I think in Toronto's case, what we really saw was kind of the Ivy show in a lot of instances. That, you know, Toronto was another, obviously, an expansion franchise that was fully made up of Korean players, and you know, they showed an ability to compete. You know, strong team play, not a lot of holes in their game overall. But I think what we really saw was, you know, Ivy, their Zarya player, showing himself as you know, a top-tier player in the league and, you know, having damage and elimination numbers up near the top, and them really playing to the kind of talent that he has. And I think in stage two, we might see even more of that, given this is a traditional DPS player that's going to get the chance to play, or I mean, presumably will get the chance to play some traditional DPSs. So I'm excited for Toronto's future. You know, this is not a team that was, you know, as built out and had the kind of experience together that Vancouver had coming in. So, you know, as much as we're going to see Vancouver adjust to this new meta, these other expansion teams, Toronto in particular, are going to continue to adjust to each other. And when it comes to, you know, stage two and forward, Toronto has, you know, a long way to go in developing together. And with Ivy at the sort of top of his game, you know, we could see an even better run from Toronto this stage. So that's an exciting thing for Canadian Overwatch fans.
They've started 1-1 in stage two, 5-4 on maps. So they're at a +1, still in a playoff spot right now. Just one spot behind the Titans, but the Titans have only played one match right now. Obviously, the chemistry will get better, and the meta will change, and like you said, maybe favor DPS players a little more than it had before. In stage one, though, Toronto Defiant, any weaknesses you saw?
I'm not sure. I would, like, it's hard, you know, like it's hard to point to very specific weaknesses in this Goats meta, right? Because, you know, so much of what you're doing is playing as a team and, you know, playing behind a shield and that kind of thing. I think, you know, the tank play could have been a little stronger in stage one. And, you know, obviously in the Goats meta, that's super important. Hopefully, you know, we see a little bit more of that. And, you know, these tanks and DPS players, they're going to get a chance to play a different kind of game, hopefully, than they played last split. Something that's kind of more true to the Overwatch game that, you know, we started knowing, where, you know, it's not all this very sort of linear strategy, where, you know, there's a little bit more open space, a little bit less sort of stress on ultimate economy. So I think it's very hard to write people off when they were playing in this very, very scripted metagame. And so I'm excited to see particularly some of these expansion teams, Toronto in particular, adapt to a sort of different metagame now, where, you know, Envy is going to be able to play a little bit more wide open of a game and that kind of thing. So, but we'll see how the States treats them, and we'll see how they adjust to this very, very big patch.
A couple quick ones before the final five. Igor, I would assume you already told us the answer, but I got to ask, Toronto's team MVP stage one.
Definitely Ivy. No hands down. Yeah. Just one of the best Zarya's in the league.
And we've seen Zarya play really kind of shift series at times. I think that was the adjustment Guangzhou made against Vancouver. And Guangzhou, 16th in the league overall to Vancouver's number one. Now that we've got a little bit of distance from that, it's probably a surprise that they were in that series so much. But I forget the player who it was, but somebody pulled out Zarya and was just shifted that series after Vancouver went up 2-0. So, good Zarya player really makes a huge difference.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's just like the nature of the kit and the way that the charge works is, you know, if you're right in the thick of things and you're playing, you know, at a high level, you're going to be able to shift fights and shift games and shift matches with strong Zarya players like we saw Somen Tsu do all year. So.
And one final one, not related to Canadian Overwatch. Shanghai has won 3 games already this season. They're still, you know, bottom third of the table. They're 3-6, -9 on maps. But they went 0-41, I think, last year. Made some roster moves. And have obviously, you know, they had nowhere to go but up. But 3 wins in stage one already. They were 3-4. They're 0-2 here in stage two. But what has changed about Shanghai that has kind of pulled them out of the basement? Right now, Los Angeles is the Valiant, not the Gladiators. But it's been Florida, yeah. Washington, and L.A. right at the bottom. Shanghai a bit above that now.
Yeah. I mean, I think that those roster moves are kind of the beginning and end of it. They assessed some of the holes in the 0-40 season. They kind of, you know, made some obviously massive changes to the people that they had around. And, you know, they kept some players on that they felt like had some potential. And, you know, they kind of revamped their entire roster. And, you know, I don't think that this team is that bad. I'm not even sure that they deserve to be as obviously they deserve, but I would expect them to maybe rise up a little bit more in the standings before they fall further. I think Gomsu and Gregory are both very good players, and I could see Shanghai being a middle pack team by the end of the year.
All right, Keith, we're just about out of time. You've already answered my original final five, so I came up with a new one for you.
Okay, sweet.
So this is the revamped final five with Keith Kapsick from The Score Esports. Thanks for chatting Overwatch League and being my OWL expert. So to thank you, I've come up with 5 new hard questions. Well, 4. One of them has stayed more or less the same. You guys at The Score make a lot of video content about kind of the history and the context of a lot of different esports. So you've probably had a lot of exposure to big, impressive moments from a variety of esports over the course of decades. What is your favorite esports moment of all time?
I'm going to say there was, I believe it was 2015 MSI in League of Legends. There was it was a very traditional sports moment. And I come from a traditional sports background, so it was pretty incredible for me, where EDG basically had this strategy for Faker, who was undefeated on the champion in the game, LeBlanc, at the time, where they basically trapped him because they knew it was game 5. They knew that he was going to pick LeBlanc because he just couldn't be beaten on it. And he picks LeBlanc, and they just immediately lock in this like Evelynn Morgana team composition that they had fully ready to beat Faker. And Faker's just the best player of all time. And SKT is the best player of all, the best team of all time. And it was just like this really kind of quintessential esports moment where, you know, they had the solution to the problem and they were able to, you know, upset SKT, and it was just an incredible series. So I would say that so far, that's one of my favorite esports moments of all time.
What has been your favorite video that you've worked on at the Score?
Without a doubt, the story of Internet Hulk. It was obviously a sad, video to work on. It's not, there's a lot of positivity in the story, but it's sad to see someone die so young. But, just the support from, Liquid and the Overwatch community and the people that were, were willing to make time to talk to me, Mickey and Hasbro, and Uber, it was just kind of an amazing project to work on. And I'm really proud of the job that we did on it. Me and my colleague, Matt Massey, edited it. So I think that's for sure the one that I remember the most right now.
I think that was coming out the day that my first interview with you came out as well. I remember you plugging it.
Yeah,
it was good. I watched it the day it dropped. This is what I really like about the Score is that you guys make these 10 to 25 minute videos, sometimes a little bit longer, that helps people who are late comers to a particular esport get the kind of the context, the legend, the history behind it.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, you've been tweeting a lot and talking a lot about Magic the Gathering Arena. We talked about it during our first episode because it was just about to come out and you were super excited. You played a lot of Magic the Gathering, the card game. There is a burgeoning pro scene. There's definitely a competitive scene to it for sure. What's the current arena meta look like?
Oh, arena meta. Well, right now we're kind of in this place where there's this argument about, what's the best competitive health format? Is it best of one or best of three? Just kind of like, the nature of card games is they can be a little difficult to watch and they can be a little long. It's a bit of a slog. So right now they're kind of trying to figure out, what the best way to play the game is on the biggest level. They just finished their first, this big sort of invitational tournament that was kind of the big sort of showcase for Arena. So that's kind of where we're at now. We'll see how that develops in the future, but it was exciting to watch. It was exciting to see some large viewership numbers for Magic, especially for me. So, hopefully that continues and I'll get to do a little bit more Magic coverage.
We've seen Hearthstone be real big in their fairly similar games, just card games essentially, on a computer. What kind of hopes do you have for Arena as an esport going forward?
My hopes, and obviously, as you might imagine, I get asked this kind of thing quite a bit. My hopes is that, I don't have any delusions of grandeur that, this game is gonna take over Overwatch and League of Legends in these incredible, exciting games. But there's something kind of casual and relax and almost like these card games, they can facilitate this kind of hanging out with your friends vibe as far as an esport goes. It's not like you're going to the dance or, the big night or whatever. It's the you're kicking back on a Friday night kind of vibe. And I think that Magic can be that the way that Hearthstone has for esports, where, it's a heavily streamed game. A lot of people play it casually. It's a good way to, dip your foot into, competitive games, and it has some, casual and competitive appeal. And that's all, that's all I really want to see for it. I don't need it to be the biggest game in the world, but I do think that, these card games can be captivating in their own way too. So I would like to see it grow the way that Hearthstone has and, the big events to be widely watched and hopefully it does get there.
You gonna make a pro run or what?
Well, I'm out there competing when I get weekends to go, but we'll see about that. I've had my share of close misses, so I don't like. I really, it is kind of the story of my Magic career. It's like losing my winning in for the pro tour or whatever. But we'll see if I ever end up getting there. I'm I'm just as happy creating content as I am playing, which is lucky for me.
Your colleague Daniel Rosen, pretty high ranked in that game as well. Who's better? Who wins in a 1v1?
I will have to say that I think that if me and Dan played, I would come out on top. That said, I've been playing for much longer than him, and his kind of, you know, instant addiction to Arena since it's come out is really just a testament to how good he is and how smart he is when it comes to games and how awesome of a game Arena is.
All right, one final last one here with Keith Kapsick from The Score Esports. This is the recycled Final Five question because it's pretty evergreen. And last time I asked you this, Magic the Gathering Arena was about to come out. What game coming out soon are you excited to play?
Game coming out soon.
Is it Borderlands 3?
Yeah, that's like the first one that comes to mind. There's some Switch titles. Like I don't know if they've announced the next Mario platformer kind of game, but I always play all of those games every time.
Mm-hmm.
I think I talked about this a little bit last time, but you know, you don't get to play a lot of games when you're covering them constantly.
Yep.
And I always end up playing all these like Mario titles that come out for the Switch. So whatever the next Mario title is, I'll definitely play that, and I'll definitely, you know, be close to Borderlands 3. As I'm sure it'll be streamed pretty heavily. Those two are probably the ones I'm most likely to play.
All right, that's all the time we have for this one. Keith Kapsick from The Score Esports, thank you very much for coming on and talking Overwatch League again with me. Let the people know where they can find you online and what you're working on next at The Score.
Okay, so you can find me on Twitter at Keith Kapsick. You can find The Score on YouTube at The Score Esports. You know, going forward, I actually think there might be a little bit of Vancouver, more runaway content, a little bit more about the historical sort of rise of that franchise, kind of the feel-good story that is Runaway. So I would look out for something coming up soon about their run in Korea. After that, I'm working on a bit of Fortnite stuff. If you're into that, feel free to check that out. Some big names from that scene that I'm, you know, have been writing about recently. Be on the lookout for that from me, and that's about it.
All right, Keith, thanks for coming on again.
No problem. Anytime.
That's it for this week's episode. Thanks to Keith for joining me. Thanks, of course, as always, to our sponsor, The Gaming Stadium. You can register for the Pinnacle 2019 right now. And you can also look into the summer circuit if you play League of Legends, Overwatch, Counter-Strike, or Fortnite. All that info you'll need is at thegamingstadium.com. And thank you for listening. I'm your host, Max Sussman. You can find me on Twitter at TrulyItBeMax and on Twitch at twitch.tv/MaxBussman. Till next time, whatever you do, don't tilt.